All right. How's everyone doing? Good? As you heard in the announcements, Kevin's not here. He is back from Mexico. The Mexico team is back as well. Kevin's just taking some long-needed rest. Because the vertical team is now going to go to Africa, the youth pastors for vertical will be in Africa, so Kevin can't take any days off to kind of recoup from his time. So he went ahead and took this weekend off. So again, he asked me to teach, and I was happy to do so. So guys, keep him in prayers, keep him in, the whole team in prayers, that they can get rest and kind of get back on their feet. So how many of you guys have rode or ridden on a roller coaster before? Is there anyone who hasn't ridden on a roller coaster of some sort? One or two people. Why don't you guys ride on those roller coasters? You kind of scared? All right, well, let me tell you guys are probably the smartest ones in the room, because this last week in Hot Springs, Arkansas, there was a dozen roller coaster riders who got stranded hanging upside down for over 30 minutes, 150 feet off the ground. So we're talking three stories high, the highest part of this roller coaster. They get stuck because there was a power outage, okay? 30 minutes. The park wasn't prepared. They had no ladders that went that high, so they had to wait for the fire department to get there, and as soon as they got there, they started bringing them down. Luckily, no one was seriously injured. There was one person who had a little bit of a neck problem. They went to the hospital. His girlfriend said, and I quote, "It was very scary. I love the amusement park, but I will never go on that X coaster again." And other people said, well, you could tell the ones who got stuck up there, because when they got down, their face was red like a cherry, okay? So we're looking at this roller coaster, and we think, you know what? They just weren't prepared. There's nothing that they could have done to prepare for this disaster that happened. And you think about it, they go to the park every day, the employees, and they get ready. They do their prep time. They probably let the machine go one time by itself, and they make sure everything's okay, it's clean, it's ready to go. Well, the thing is that they can never prepare for a power outage to knock it out and have these people stuck upside down. So tonight we're going to talk about, if you remember last week we talked about God's preparation. I'm sorry, today we're going to talk about, not tonight. Today we're going to talk about how God's preparation of David turned into David's perspiration. And what we're going to see is how David was prepared, and now how David went out and actually used that, or went into action, if you would, for God. And if you guys remember last week, if you guys were here, you took notes, we looked at how God prepared David's, well, three things of David's life. David's heart, David's experiences, or David's life, and he also prepared the people of Israel as well for a king, a godly king to come through. They were getting kind of sick of Saul. So that's what we left off last week on how God prepared David. This week we're going to see how that actually in turn kind of catapulted him into action and how he didn't hesitate to get into action. So if you guys also remember last week, we went over and we kind of looked at what the Mexico missionaries from Velocity went through. They did a bunch of preparation. They did team builders. They did prayer. They ate. They slept. They did games. All of this stuff kind of looked fun last week. We saw it, and it was like, oh, they look like they're having so much fun, you know? Well, this week we're going to look at what that preparation led to. Remember, they prepared one day, and their trip was 10 days. So they took one of those days to prepare for the 10. And you can see on the slides here, we have a couple of the slides. They did a lot of things. They did a lot of labor. They also did a lot of working with the community. They went to a battered women's shelter, and they went to an orphanage as well. So you can see in the pictures up here, this house actually up here on the top left, last year's Mexico team went and actually built that house. From the ground up, they totally built the house, and they went back this year to see it, to see how the house was going, how the family was. Well, the family wasn't there, but the house wasn't painted. It was half painted white, and there was a ton of weeds in the yard. So they took one of their free days. Now, on a mission trip, you have a couple free days normally in a 10-day thing. They took one of their own personal free days that they could be going having fun, and they went back to that house. They painted it for them. They painted the blue trim, and they tore all the weeds out of the house. And again, the family wasn't there. So the family had a house built for them, and they came back this week, and it was painted, and it looked good. So they did that. They also, where you see up in the top middle, that's Kevin, where the sanctuary is going to be for this church in Mexico. They're standing in the middle of it. It's not yet built. They did a lot of devotion time. They had a lot of quiet time with God. They did a lot of work. They dug trenches. You can see right here, they're standing in a trench that was 4 feet deep, and it went about probably 50 yards. It was a huge trench. And you can see them, they're all kicking back, laying there, and they're digging, and you see Chris and Kevin showing off their guns there and their farmer's tan. And again, you see them working in the orphanage. So they did all that preparation that looked fun, And as much fun as this kind of looks on a slide, it was a lot of work for these guys. So this is just kind of the response to that preparation. I thought I'd show you guys that because if you guys weren't kept up on the blog or anything like that, we see now from being back here as their support team kind of what happened here, what they prepared for. And actually, it ended up working really good. They had to work as a team. They had to work together. They had to still have their quiet time. And they actually ended up giving more to Mexico than we probably ever could have imagined for them. So last week when we read about David, we read about the last thing we left off was, does anyone remember what we left off on? He got anointed. Remember, Samuel anointed him with oil to be king. Well, we're going to pick up today in 1 Samuel 17. If you guys want to start turning there, that's fine. Let me give you just kind of a brief summary of what's happened between the place where we left off and where we're going to pick it up. Samuel left, remember? He anointed King David. And then Saul started having nightmares. He started being troubled by an evil spirit, and he couldn't go to sleep, essentially. So we talked to people in the kingdom, and he found some people that he trusted, and they said, well, there's this guy named David. He's from Bethlehem, and he's really good on a harp. So Saul called David to his castle, and he said, hey, I need you to play the harp for me so I can go to sleep. So David did that, and it ended up working, and then David eventually, you know, Saul felt better about himself, and David went back to Bethlehem. So David's in Bethlehem, still being a shepherd, still being a submissive servant to his family. His father's getting older now. It's been about maybe 2 years, people guess. So he's still probably under the age of 16 from the time we left him. And David here is watching the sheep, and three of his oldest three brothers went to battle. The Philistines and the Israelites were starting to have a war, and his older three went to serve in the army. And his father was too old to make the journey, so he said, David, will you please take them bread, take them cheese, and take them bread and some milk, and then take their captain, who's above them, some cheese. And David just submissively said, absolutely, I'll do that. So we pick up, the Philistines are, it's kind of like this mounting battle, and they come to the Valley of Elah, and we can see here, these are pictures taken by Adam Medina last year when he was in Israel. These are actually pictures from the Valley of Elah. This is where the battle of David and Goliath actually happened. And you can see here the shepherd actually bringing sheep down. Kind of a cool picture of now it's a place where they have sheep. But at that time, it was a huge battlefield. And you can kind of see it kind of comes down into like this valley. And actually on the other side, it looks very similar to that. It has another hill. And it comes down and it meets in the middle. And there's a little, like a little riverbed. Very small, something you could probably walk through, just a little creek. That runs right through the middle. So on one side of the valley, you have the Philistine army camped up on top, and on the other side, you have the Israelite army camped up on top. So you have both armies and this valley. Now, the Philistines were pretty smart, and they knew that if they went to battle with the Israelites, it was going to be pretty bloody. It wasn't going to end good. I mean, they may have won, but they were going to lose a lot of people. So they picked their mightiest warrior. We all know who that is. That's Goliath. And they picked him to go and face a one-on-one battle. Because back in that day, if it was actually kind of tradition. If you had a warrior that was incredible at what he did, you were going to send him out because it saves a lot of lives, a lot of money, and a lot of time. So we see Goliath coming down to the valley. He actually comes right to the edge of that little creek there. And he calls to the Israelite army. And he says, I challenge you guys to a one-on-one battle. You pick your best warrior and come down to the valley, and whoever wins out of this fight will be the winner of the battle, and you must surrender to the other side. So Goliath starts doing this, and he continues to do this. Well, the Israelites get scared, they get fearful. They start, actually, every time he comes out, it says they run and hide in their tent. I mean, there you can see that's a good distance away. It's not like he had a gun or anything like that. He came down to the bottom, and as soon as he started talking, they would run to their tent and hide. They were that scared of who Goliath was. And there's some good reasoning to why they were scared of Goliath. We all know he's a giant, right? I don't know about you guys. I've always pictured Goliath as like a Yao Ming figure, you know, kind of, you know, big, tall, skinny guy. Probably like Kevin, but maybe a foot or two taller, you know. Not nothing too, you know, too big, but just kind of tall. Well, actually, he stood 9 feet 9 inches tall. That's probably the biggest man we ever have on record that actually lived to be that old. Because normally when you're a giant, you outgrow your heart and you end up dying at an early age. So you have Goliath 9 feet 9 inches. To tell you guys how big that is, now I'm standing on a stage that's probably a foot, a little bit over a foot. So if I get down here, you know, I'm pretty lifelike right here. Well, Goliath stood to the top of this speaker right here in the middle. So essentially, he went right to that ceiling top, okay? He could change these light bulbs out without even, you know, a ladder. So he's this tall, okay? So yes, he's tall. We all know he's a giant. He's tall. But there's some characteristics that they talk about him that kind of make me have a different picture of who this guy was. He had an armor of scales or a coat of mail. You guys have all seen it like in the old, you know, medieval movies where they have like that armor, that chain link kind of thing. And it went from his shoulders to his knees, and they still use it, yeah. And that coat of mail, that little piece of metal that went over him, weighed 175 to 200 pounds just by itself. The head of his spear, he's got a spear, probably a big spear. The head of the spear alone weighs 25 pounds. So right there we have 225 pounds of stuff he's carrying around. He also had a bronze helmet, bronze leggings, and a bronze javelin. Together, those all three weighed another 100 pounds. So right now we're at 325 pounds. And in front of him, he had a man, just a regular man, go out, and he had a shield with him that was 8 feet 6 inches tall. So his shield alone was 8 feet 6 inches. So the only thing you could see of him was his head. Everything else was completely covered. So we have a guy that's as tall as the ceiling, and he's carrying, let me let you in on a secret, I'm 240 pounds. I'm a pretty big guy on today's level, you know what I mean? I've probably got you guys doubled, tripled, some of you. I'm 240 pounds. I weigh about as much as just his spear and his, like, coat of mail. So that would be like me holding onto his back, and he's going to war, and then he's probably got, like, two of you guys on his legs, and he's walking around with all this weight. So Goliath is no slouch. I mean, he is a real deal big man. I mean, he's huge. He's got to be ripped up. Imagine some of the biggest guys we know today, maybe some of the wrestlers, some of the football players. Think about how ripped up they are. I mean, they're just so buff. That's what we're thinking about Goliath. He's a presence. And honestly, he'd probably scare me too. And I'd probably run away like much like the Israelites did. But we see Goliath coming down for 40 days. Every day he came out and made this challenge. And we see right before where we're about to pick up, Goliath comes out again. And it says one thing here. It changes a little bit. It says Goliath came up to the Israelites. Now, remember the last picture? It was the valley. Remember, he's on one side, Israelites on the other. So he would always come down and call up to the Israelites. Well, now he's starting to come up. So he's crossed that creek, and he's now making his way up to the Israelites. So essentially, you could just imagine every day he's getting a little gutsier because he's seeing these coward Israelites just running away from him. So every day he probably takes a step forward, gets a little closer. And so now he's 40 steps. And remember, his steps are probably pretty big. He's probably halfway up that hill, I'm guessing, already after 40 days calling out the Israelites. And I didn't think much of it. I thought, oh, he's coming up, whatever. I didn't even catch that word, actually, when I was reading it. But again, I'm reading Chuck Swindoll's book on David, and he states this about this coming up about Goliath. He says, you see, if you tolerate a Goliath, he'll take over your territory, he'll move into your camp, he'll take your thoughts that normally ought to be on God, and he'll put them on himself. That's why you can't afford to tolerate giants, you must kill them. And you got to think about that. In our lives, how many times do we have something that we, maybe it's a sin in our life, maybe it's just something, you know, kind of small. Maybe we pick on a brother or sister. It's not that big. Well, if you let that sin go for a while, it starts building bigger and bigger and gets closer and closer to your heart. And that's kind of what happens. I don't know if you guys have ever done anything that maybe took your mind completely off God. Well, normally that's not supposed to happen. Everything's supposed to be on God. And that's what we see here. The Israelites are taking their focus off of who their God is and putting their focus on this giant coming up daily because they forget that the Lord is bigger than Goliath. So we see here that David is on his way taking the food, and he hears Goliath make these, you know, outrageous claims. And he's talking to the people, and the people are so scared they're hiding in his tent. So you got to imagine like little ants. As soon as Goliath steps out, they all scatter, all into their tent. And David's probably standing there by himself going like, what happened? Where'd you guys go? You know, looking behind him, what happened? Well, we're going to pick up now in 1 Samuel 17, verse 26. Real quick little reading here. We'll go to a couple other readings, but this one is the first one. It says, then David spoke to the men who stood by him, saying, what shall be done for the man who kills this Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? So David, unlike the rest of the Israelites, kind of goes, where'd you guys go? What's wrong with you guys? Who is this guy? Who does this guy think he is coming to us? You know?
We are the children of God. We are the people of God. And you guys are running away like little girls, you know? You guys scared of this guy? God's so much bigger than him. God will take care of him. And he says, what will happen to the man who kills this Philistine? If whoever kills that Philistine, if they would have won, they got a kind of a nice little reward. They were exempt from taxes for the rest of their life, which is actually pretty big back then. They were exempt from taxes. They got to marry the king's daughter, and they got a pretty substantial amount of money. So whoever killed him was getting stuff, kind of like a reward. You know how we put a reward out today? Most wanted, there's a reward of, you know, $1 million for Osama bin Laden or something like that. That's kind of what happened. Most wanted Goliath. Whoever kills him gets this. And that's why he asked that. Well, what will happen? But more importantly, he says, who is this unclean man to come to us and talk to us? We are God's people. And you can see here David's bold. David comes, he speaks boldly, he speaks assuredly, and he doesn't hesitate. Who is this guy? I don't care how big he is. Does he know who he's messing with? He have any idea who he's messing with? And it almost seems like David's kind of angry at his fellow Israelites. He's looking at his three brothers that are there, and he's looking at the other people that are there, and he's saying, what are you guys, cowards? What's wrong with you guys? He was mad at them. And that's not the first time we see anyone in the Bible being angry. As much as you and I probably think that anger is a sin, and it is to some point. There is anger if it's in the wrong regard. If you're just angry because someone wronged you, that's not right. But there's a biblical anger, a righteous anger that we're allowed to have, and that's actually we actually should have. If someone were to come in here right now to the middle of Velocity service who wasn't a Christian, and they start throwing the tables around, and they come up here and they hit me, it's okay to be angry at them, you know? How dare you come into the God's house while we're teaching God's word and you upset that? And we see Jesus actually have this kind of anger in John 2, verse 15 and 16. He goes into the temple to visit during one of their holidays, and he sees that they're selling stuff. They essentially turned the temple into Costco. Instead of being a place that you can go to worship God, they're selling stuff there. They're changing out money. They're selling all the stuff that you should sacrifice to God. And he goes in there, and it says, Jesus made a whip from some ropes and chased them out of the temple. He drove out the sheep and cattle, scattered the money changers' coins over the floor, and turned over their tables. Then going over to the people who sold doves, he told them, get these things out of here. Stop turning my father's house into a marketplace. And when it says he put together some rope and made a whip, he whipped these guys. This was no joke of a rope. It was a huge rope, and he's whipping people out of here. That doesn't sound like the nice, gentle Jesus that we all know. But he was angry because they were defiling God's house. Well, how much angrier should we be if people defile God's children? And that's what David's saying here. You guys are defiling God's children, and I'm not going to allow this anymore. And if you guys aren't going to stand up, well, I'll do it. You know, he was totally justified in his anger. But we see here that God's preparation of David allows David to act in a way through his speech. He worked for God through his words. And too many times we think when we have to work for God, we have to go on a mission trip or we have to go clean someone's yard. We think that it always has to be with our sweat, our actual sweat, and we have to do labor. Well, that's not necessarily true. That's good to do, and it's actually commanded of us to do. But to be able to do it through our vocabulary, through our mouth, is a much bigger thing that we need to work on. And a couple of ways that we can do it is witnessing. Of course, you can just go out and talk about God. Singing, as weird as that sounds. Worship, when you guys come in here and worship, that's a great way to work for God. That's a great way to follow him and show through your words or through your actions like that, through your mouth, how you can honor God. The other is kind words, building other people up instead of tearing them down and being sarcastic. Maybe just saying, hey, good job. You know what I mean? Maybe next time we'll do better. That kind of thing, kind words like that. And one of the ones that I learned this week, which is really hard for me to admit, is apologizing. This week, I got to be honest with you, I completely blew it as a Christian. A brother that works here at the church with me came to me and asked me a question. And I don't know why I did it, but I completely lied to him. Right to his face, right looking in his eyes, knowing at the time it was a lie. Not kind of like, well, maybe I can cover that up. No, I knew it was a lie. He asked me for something, I said I didn't have it, and I lied. Well, this was on Thursday, and I had started studying already for this message. And, man, I couldn't study. It was just tearing me up inside. Spirit was totally convicting me on what I did. And I knew it was wrong. Well, he came back later that night, And he asked me again some other questions, and I built up on top of that lie. So I just kind of added to it a little bit more and added to it. So right now I have like, by about Friday morning, I have about three layers of these lies that kind of built up on top of each other. Well, I couldn't really sleep that night. I ended up not even being able to study that night. I felt like sick even trying to read the Bible because I knew what I did was wrong. And I knew I have to make this right. Now, here's the worst part. When I got here Friday morning, I had gotten away with it. I had totally gotten away with it. No one would have ever known. It would have just been my little secret, and I could have gotten away with it because the guy didn't care anymore. He's, you know, whatever. But I couldn't do it. So about halfway through the day, he came in to Kevin's office, and I was in there, and I had to beg him, literally, not beg him, but I threw myself at him, and I said, I'm coming to you humbly. I'm asking for an apology, and I'm asking for some grace. And I said, look, I lied to you. And he didn't even know I lied to him. So I had to kind of explain each layer of those lies and how they built on top of each other. So it made me even feel worse. Well, this was a lie, and 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 this was a lie. And he's like, whoa, that was a huge lie. And I said, yeah, I know, I'm sorry. I hope you can forgive me. Well, the thing that was great is that he said, you're forgiven right away. It's fine. It's done. Taken care of. It's good. No one's hurt. Forgiven. And he said something right at the end that was kind of great, because I was actually right here about to start teaching on how our words, or studying on how our words can honor God. And he said, you know what? What you just did is what makes you a Christian. What makes a Christian a Christian? What makes you a man? What makes you a leader for God? Is that you can say you're sorry and ask for forgiveness. If you would have caught me 3 or 4 years ago, I would have lied and never thought a second about it and continued to lie. But that's what makes you a Christian. And I thought, what better way to show you guys how I'm up here teaching you guys. I'm a complete sinner just like you guys. I'm no different. In fact, I'm probably worse this week because I lied to a pastor, okay, which probably makes it worse. But yet, through my apology, even though I shouldn't have had to apologize because I never should have sinned, but through that apology, I was able to work for the Lord and use the preparation that he's been putting in me for the past few years and put it into action through my words by just apologizing. And it made me kind of think that was really kind of cool. You know, I wish I wouldn't have lied because it made me feel sick. But how cool that was that just by apologizing, I was able to work for God. So after this, after David kind of talks to his brothers and he kind of calls them out and says, you guys are, you know, sissies for not going out there. You know, he gets a lot of flack from it. His brothers start kind of like making fun of him, saying, what are you doing here anyways? Did you just come out here to watch a battle? Did you just come out here to see people get killed and get bloodied? And then his other brother says, aren't there some sheep back home that you need to be watching? All sarcastic like. Now, these are the same brothers that were present when he got anointed. These are the same brothers that stood there when Samuel told them, you're not worthy, but David is. So they know eventually that David's going to be the king of them. But again, we see a common theme with David. He's bold, but yet he's very humble. Because he didn't fire back at them like most of us would be sarcastically and say, whatever, I'm your king, essay, you know, nothing like that. He didn't say anything like that. That's not who David is. David's a godly man, and he just kind of shrugged it off and went away. Well, see, the thing is that some of these guys went back and told their captains about, hey, there was this dumb kid who said that he could take on Goliath. When those captains told their generals, hey, there was this dumb kid that said he could take on Goliath. Well, this worked its way up all the way till it got back to Saul. Saul heard that there was one person, he didn't care how old he was at the time, he just heard one person was willing to go and do what? Say he would at least go out there and kill Goliath. Exactly. So Saul said, call this guy in. Well, Saul, I'm sure, was expecting at least someone that looked like me. You know what I mean? At least someone that was over the age of 20 maybe, you know, old enough to, you know, hold up a sword. And then David walks in. Imagine, David's one of you guys. He walks in, he's just a little shepherd boy, probably skinny. He's still ruddy, you know, he's still got that red hair. And he just probably looks like a kid. And Saul's like, what are you doing here, buddy? You think you're really going to kill Saul? And that's when we saw last week when he talked about how David told Saul about the lion and the bear that he grabbed by the beard and killed. This is when David tells him. David says, I'm not scared of anything. God put these things in my life. I killed them, and I'm ready to move on. And I'm going to use what God prepared me for here. And I'm not scared of Goliath. You may be, but I'm not. So Saul essentially says, all right, I'll give you a crack at him. What's the worst that could happen? They're already going to defeat us. So I might as well send someone out there. So we'll pick up again in verse 38 through 40. And it says, so Saul clothed David with his armor, and he put a bronze helmet on his head. He also clothed him with a coat of mail. David fastened his sword to his armor, and he tried to walk, for he had not tested them. And David said to Saul, I cannot walk with these, for I have not tested them. So David took them off. Then he took his staff in his hand, and he chose for himself 5 smooth stones from the brook, and he put them in a shepherd's bag, in a pouch which he had. He grabbed his sling, that which was in his hand, and he drew near to the Philistines. So, Saul, who's kind of a big guy, if you guys have ever read before, Saul was head and shoulders above the rest of the Jewish people. So he was the tallest of the Jewish people. That's why they picked him. So they picked him for king, because he looked like a king. He was worthy to be a king because he was tall and good looking. So he puts his stuff on David. Imagine me if I had like an armor, okay? I'm 6'1", I weigh 240 pounds. If I were to grab one of you guys here and put you up here and try to even put my clothes on you, imagine what that would look like, how ridiculous that would look like. You know, my shirt would go down to your guys' ankles probably, and that's probably what we're looking at here. And David can't even walk in this. He's like, Saul, I can't use this. I can't walk in this. I've not even practiced in this kind of stuff. And he says, and he took it off. He just took it off, and he grabbed what God gave him. He grabbed his staff, and he grabbed his sling, and he went to the Philistines. He didn't hesitate. And what I like to see here is how he gave back what men was trying to give him. He took off what Saul was giving him, and he put on what God allowed him to have, what God gave him. And he knew that God prepared him already, and he didn't need to add to God's preparation. You can't beat God's preparation. So he took what God had prepared him with, what he killed the lion and the bear with, is all he needed to kill this giant. And he drew near to the Philistines. And that's one of the things that we commonly forget here. As Christians, we like to think that a lot of times God is out there, and we pray to God, and we ask him questions. But in all reality, if one of your friends gives you advice, or if your mom or dad gives you advice, or if Kevin or one of your leaders gives you advice, you will automatically take that advice first, more than likely. You will take that because you know what? Someone's actually telling you. And you know what? They're older or they're more experienced, so I've got to listen to them, right? I mean, they're here. Maybe God put them here for me. Well, that's true. Maybe God did put them there for you. But more importantly, have you asked God? Have you actually got on your knees and prayed to God and said, God, I trust you. I trust that you've prepared my life for this moment, and that whatever you want, you've already instilled in me. God's not going to send you to battle and then tell you after the battle, say, oh, you should have grabbed that sword. Sorry, I forgot to tell you that, guys. No, he's going to send you to battle fully armed with what you should be armed with. Not what I think you should be armed with. Not what your mom or dad thinks you should be armed with. God knows. He has the most experience of anyone, if you guys didn't know that. He is the most experienced person that you'll ever know. So that's what we have to remember out of this. David put his actions, or made his actions speak a lot louder than his words. It was one thing to be out there and call out his fellow brothers and the Israelites and say, hey, you guys are cowards. But now you actually see him putting that into action. He's grabbing a sling and he draws near. He doesn't hesitate. He doesn't go out and practice his slingshot. He's not trying to get prepared, and he's not doing push-ups before so he looks good. Nothing like that. He grabs a sling, he grabs his staff, and he walks right out, grabs 5 stones, and he heads off to kill Goliath. And you may ask real quickly, why did he grab 5 stones? If he's so confident in the Lord, why did he have 5 stones? Why didn't he just take 1? If he trusted the Lord, it would have been a miraculous. It would have been just 1. Well, guess what? He did only grab 1 stone for Goliath, but Goliath had 4 brothers. And so he grabbed 4 other stones to kill his brothers. David doesn't mess around. When you talk bad about his God, he's going to kill you and he's going to kill your family. And he doesn't hesitate and he'll tell you. And he told Saul and he told Goliath, I'm going to kill you and I'm going to take out everyone that you know. And that's why you see here. And I read a story this week that kind of reminded me of this, like this action, this word speaking louder, or action speaking louder than words, I'm sorry. And I read about this guy. His name is Bill Anderson. This is actually a picture of him here. Looks like a pretty big dude, you know. He looks all confident, like he's looking out on the world. Well, this guy's 81 years old. 81 years old. And he's a bicycle rider. Well, he hasn't been a bicycle rider his whole life. He's been a pretty good athlete. He used to run a lot. Well, he found out that he could help a cause. He could help a crossroads mission in Yuma, Arizona by bike riding. He would raise money through bike rides. And when he was 78 years old, he rode from the Mexican border to the Canadian border and back to the Mexican border. Now, I don't know if you guys have ever driven that. I've actually gone to Montana, and I've gone up to Idaho before from New Mexico. It is the most painstaking, agonizing drive you'll ever be on. It's horrible. It's forever away. And yet he's doing it on a bike. Well, now his new mission is, in the next 14 to 16 days, he is going to ride 2,000 miles around the perimeter of Arizona. This 81-year-old man, I don't know if any of you guys have grandparents that are maybe in their 80s. I have one grandfather who's 78 years old right now. I would be impressed if he could walk to the mailbox and get his mail, much less get on a bike for 16 days and ride around the state of Arizona. But he's doing it for a cause. And I thought, what a great way to look at how preparation actually pays off. How this guy said, you know what, I'm going to help this mission out. I'm going to help you guys out. Well, a lot of times we say we'll do something, and it sounds great, and we get recognition for it, and they'll be like, oh, that's such a great guy. He said he's going to help. But this guy actually got up and did it. He was 81 years old. I'm sure when they approached them and said, hey, I'm going to ride my bike from Canada to Mexico and back, that they were probably, okay, sir, thanks, you know. Sure you will. Wink, wink. Well, no. He got on his bike, and they were probably like, wow, this guy's real. Cool. And I thought that's a great analogy, a great picture of what it means to actually put actions ahead of your words, to actually follow up what you say with the actual action. So, we see David. He's drawing near to the Philistines. He goes out to right probably at the base of that little creek, and he stands there. He may have said something. And Goliath sees that, and he comes down to the river. Now imagine, he's standing up on that hill again, and he's looking down. He sees a little ant-looking person down there. He's like, cool, they finally sent someone out. Let's do this. And he gets down probably right to the base of that creek, and he's drawing closer and closer, and he's probably looking and going, what is this? Who is this guy? Who is this kid? And that's what he says. He actually calls out to the Israelites above David. He didn't even recognize David. He looks at him and says, what am I, a dog that you send out a stick for me to play fetch with? He essentially looked at David and said, well, who's this little twerp? He sent out this little kid. What is he going to do? Are you guys joking with me? Is this some joke? And he got so upset. He said, I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to insult myself. I have a reputation to uphold. Well, then David speaks up. And I don't know. David has a way with his words. I don't care if one of you guys spoke like this, you would probably be teaching right now because David had a way. And David said, just as boldly as he's ever said, he said, today is the Lord's, and I will kill you and cut off your head so that all the world will know that my God is God and not to mess with his people. Now, I summarize that kind of in like my language, but that's what he said. David's going like, what am I, a dog? I'm not going to do this. And David said, hey, be quiet for a second. I'm going to kill you. I'm going to cut your head off. We're going to win the battle, and the whole world's going to know that you mess with the wrong people and that our God will wipe out anyone. Well, Goliath, of course, got insulted by this. And he said, fine, little boy. You wanna fight? Let's fight. Goliath agreed to the battle. And that's what we'll pick up here. We'll pick up in verse 49. And we'll go through 52 here. Then David put his hand in his bag and took out a stone. And he slung it and struck the Philistine in his forehead so that the stone sunk into his forehead and he fell on his face to the earth. So David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone and struck the Philistine and killed him. But there was no sword in the hand of David. Remember, he said he was going to cut his head off. So therefore David ran and stood over the Philistine, took his sword and drew it out of the sheath and killed him and cut off his head with it. And when the Philistines saw that their champion was dead, they fled. Now the men of Israel and Judah arose and shouted and pursued the Philistines as far as the entrance of the valley to the gates of Ekron. And the wounded Philistines fell along the road of Sharam, even as far as Gath and Ekron. So we see here David, we all know how this ended. This wasn't a big surprise. We all know that David was going to kill Goliath. But here's some kind of cool facts maybe the guys will like. Remember, he had his shield. That was, you know, you could only see his head above it. Well, David and God had a plan. We're going to use this stone. The only place that, remember, he has a helmet. And if you guys, who's seen Lord of the Rings in here? Any of them? Pretty much most of us. You see, remember Lord of the Rings, the helmets they'd have? They would come up all around here and they would come down the nose. Because they knew that the nose, if broken or pushed up, could kill you, right? I mean, that's why you have it there. It kind of guards your face. It leaves your eyes and your mouth. Well, the word here in Hebrew is forehead. but it could mean anything from the cheek up. So in all reality, when it says the stone sunk into his head, well, what happened is David struck him in the eye socket, and the stone went through his eye into his brain and killed him. So kind of like a bullet would do now, but he went through the only opening he could get. Kind of a gross scenario, but he did. The stone went through the guy's eye. It's kind of cool for me, but I don't know about some of you. And then we see him take this sword. Remember, this is Goliath, so it's got to be a pretty big sword. And I'm guessing that the strength that he had to pull that sword out was only from God. And he pulled that sword off, and he cut off Goliath's head. And he probably held it up, like all conquering style, like all, you know, gladiator. Woo, look at this, you know. And when the Philistines saw it, they were probably flipping out. They were like, whoa, 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 we weren't supposed to lose this one. They probably didn't even have on their armor. They were probably like, Goliath's going to win. They were kind of arrogant. But they forgot who they were messing with. They were messing with God. And God was going to take care of them for them. And one of the things I like about how this ends is David finishes the job. He doesn't go out there and just kill him. That would have been enough for me. That would have been enough for me to recognize that this is a big defeat. It was almost a miracle to see this. But David grabs a sword and cuts the head off. And this is a picture that's actually pretty famous of David holding this head up. Okay? And it's pretty cool. But the thing about finishing the job is you see David eventually, if you guys continue to read on through 1 Samuel, he takes two things from Saul. Or I'm sorry, from Goliath. First off, he cuts the head off. And the thing is he pursues the Philistines with the head still in his hand. So if you guys could imagine a football player running down the field with a football, David's running through this valley with a big Goliath head under his arms, killing other Philistines. Okay? The guy won't let go of the head. He's pretty, you know, he'd be pretty excited, you know? He'd be pretty cool. Well, when he comes back, and after they get rid of all the Philistines, he takes Goliath's armor and he puts it in his tent. He gives the head of Goliath to Saul, because that's kind of what you did. You said, here's your battle. And it was essentially the winning token. But he keeps the armor. And he keeps the armor not for bragging rights, not to bring his buddies over, his little velocity mid-school buddies, and say, look at, I killed that dude. Look at all that. Woo! You know? Nothing like that. I think the reason he kept it is to really remember how glorified that day was, how great God is. Because he knew, looking at himself in the mirror, he could never kill a man like that without God. And that armor was a constant reminder that the only reason he's there is for God. And I think that's something that we need to take a look at. The Mexico team, when they get back, they should have something that they could look at, whether it just be a picture or something, and say, you know what? I never would have first off made it to Mexico, much less done what I did, or did what I done, whatever that is, down in Mexico without God. It's a constant reminder of how great our God really is. And again, he just finished the job. So in closing, last week, you guys can remember, we talked about preparation. And we talked about a couple things that you guys can look at in your own lives to really find out if you're prepared for Christ. If you're prepared for the battle that's ahead of you. Now, it's not going to be a battle like Goliath. You're not going to have to go out and kill a giant or even anybody, okay? But you will have to fight the fight. And we looked at three things. First and foremost, the number one thing we looked at was your walk with God. We looked at if you had a walk with God, if you had a close and intimate walk with God, if you had a walk at all. And that was the first thing I said, hey, you guys must have a walk. Before you do anything else, before you can even go to take on Goliath, you must have a walk with God. Because David did, and he continuously knew what God wanted. Remember, he was kind of led by God. He didn't lead God where he wanted him to go. So your first was walk with God. Second was, how much preparation do you have interacting with God's people? Do you serve in a ministry? Are you involved in ministry? Do you fellowship with others? And do you do discipleship groups? And if the answer was no to any of that, I told you guys, get on it. Well, this week we're going to follow it up from the preparation to if you guys are doing that. Some of you guys came up to me last week and you said, hey, how can I get involved? How can I do this? And I told you guys ways. Well, here's the thing. This week's lesson is this. Finish it. Do it. Start it and finish it. Don't just come to a leader or a pastor and say, hey, I want to get involved. How can I do it? If we give you advice, take it. If you're serious, and do it. And much like David, talk it, do it, and the most important, finish it. If you guys say you're going to do Oasis this summer, do Oasis, but finish it. Go through all 6 weeks if possible. If you guys say you're going to help with a car wash, you sign up for a car wash, well, you better show up to the car wash and you better do the car wash. That's what it means to be a Christian. That's what last week we talked about. How do I prepare for it? Well, what's the point in preparing for a battle if you never go to battle? If you guys go to do all the discipleship and you read your Bible all the time, but you never do anything with it, it's pointless. And you might as well not be doing it. It's not about knowing who God is. It's about doing what God wants and telling people who God is. So that's pretty much it. In closing, we learned from David and Goliath two things. Preparation leads to perspiration. And my plea to you guys is, first off, be prepared. Get prepared. But second off, do the work of God. So, Lord, we just thank you for this day. We thank you for the Mexico team that was able to come back so successfully in your name to show the love of you, to show the Mexicans how much God means. And Lord, I pray for the students in here right now that they will, first off, prepare themselves for what you have for their life. And second off, don't get scared. Go out and actually do your work. Do what your plans are for them. And Lord, I just lift up this week. I pray that you bring us all back here safely. I pray for Tiffany that you will send her out to do mighty things for you. We lift all these things up in your name. Amen.